It is Thursday, March 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a raft of controversies swirl around the Trump White House.
The number of people who have revolved in and out of the White House and out of top positions in the executive branch is extraordinary.
Today is International Women's Day, and we get reaction from around the world. And a hijab-wearing TV reporter charts a new path for Muslim Americans. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to sign tariffs on steel and aluminum imports as early as Thursday, with some trading partners receiving temporary exemptions. White House officials said Mexico and Canada would get a 30-day exception that could be extended. Trump's plan to impose the tariffs led to the resignation of his top economic advisor, Gary Cohn. That resignation follows the other departures of high-ranking staff members such as Communications Director Hope Hicks, Deputy Communications Director Joss Raffel, and Staff Secretary Ron Porter. It also occurs as porn star Stormy Daniels, who claims to have had an affair with Trump, she is now suing Trump, asking a court to declare her non-disclosure agreement before the 2016 presidential election non-valid because Trump did not sign it. The president has denied the alleged affair. Norman Ornstein is resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a Washington think tank. I asked him whether the chaos surrounding the Trump White House is unprecedented.
We've never seen anything like this. And going back as far as I can in terms of turnover in previous administrations, what we've seen in 1 year is something that you wouldn't find in 4 years for most previous administrations. The number of people who have revolved in and out of the White House and out of top positions in the executive branch is extraordinary. But I should also note another important element here. We generally consider 636 Senate-confirmed positions from the executive branch to be significant policy-making ones. They range from the cabinet down through the sub-cabinet, the undersecretaries and deputy secretaries and assistant secretaries, to the heads of bureaus and agencies, things like the Centers for Disease Control, for example. Now, well over a year into the administration, almost half of those positions remain unfilled. Most of them don't even have a nominee. And that includes critical things like the position of ambassador to South Korea at a time when we're facing this potential crisis on the Korean Peninsula. So this is a level of government dysfunction that is unique.
Why do so many of those jobs remain unfilled?
So I think we have several reasons for this. One is you have a president who is simply unconcerned about administering government agencies and programs. When he was asked about the large number of vacancies at the top levels of the State Department, for example, he said, "We don't really need them. I'm the only one who matters." So you've got that. You have what I think is a not very effective personnel operation, but you also have two other realities that I suppose are linked. One is that they are looking only for people who are loyal to Donald Trump. So the vast pool of people who served in previous Republican administrations, that talent pool that you would normally turn to, includes a large number of people who not just were never Trumpers, but many who simply didn't support or even opposed Trump when he was going for the nomination or sometimes for the general election. But the second reality is that a lot of people who might in other circumstances have jumped at the chance of working in the federal government are very hesitant to. And frankly, that's going to become more and more of a hurdle. If you think about coming into an administration, and especially into a White House, at this point where we have this ongoing investigation, and where you know you have a president who has only one thing that matters, which is loyalty to him, the chance that you might get caught up in the middle of that serious investigation, possibly having to lawyer up yourself, maybe being caught up in obstruction of justice or a cover-up, or placed into an untenable position, that's the sort of thing that is going to cause a lot of people to say thanks but no thanks.
Well, among the issues swirling about the Trump White House is the latest, and I'm just going to just ask you the one question about this, which involves the porn actress Stormy Daniels. She said she was paid to keep quiet about her alleged affair with Mr. Trump, and she's now suing the president, and she's asking a court to declare their nondisclosure agreement before the last presidential election void because Trump did not sign it. We've had scandals, of course, in Washington before, but this seems a rather unique one.
You know, one of the things that has lit up Twitter over the last few days is people writing, how do you think the Republican Congress would have reacted if we had found out that Barack Obama had had an affair with a porn star, paid $130,000 to keep it quiet, and then was being sued? And of course, we would have had an impeachment resolution within a nanosecond. We haven't had things like this before. We've had sex scandals in the White House, of course. We've had enormous issues. We had a president where the impetus for impeachment, Bill Clinton, came from a relationship with an intern in the White House. But we have 19 women who've made accusations against Donald Trump. He's denied them all. He promised before the election that when the election was over, he would sue every one of them, and he hasn't sued any of them. And we had the spectacle just the other day of the White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, saying in the same breath, the president had no relationship with Stormy Daniels, but he's just won an arbitration case so that she can't talk about any of it. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. If you didn't have a relationship, you would be perfectly all right with her talking about it, and then you could sue her for libel. But if there was no relationship, why would your lawyer pay $130,000 just to keep her quiet? So there are a lot of issues swirling around this, and it might have been lost in the shuffle because there are so many scandals and so many issues going on out there that one tends to cancel out another. But Stormy Daniels now taking it to this level brings it back into the spotlight. Sarah Huckabee Sanders responding the way she did makes it even more of an issue. And of course, there are reports now that Trump is very upset by what his press secretary said. Maybe she'll be the next one on the way out.
Norman Ornstein, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Time now for social media. Well, today is International Women's Day, and it's something we'll hear a bit more about later on in the program. Former Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton tweets, in honor of hashtag International Women's Day, I want to celebrate some of the women and girls who inspire me every day. These women resist inequality, insist on a better world, persist against all odds, and enlist others in our shared fights. Brandon tweets on hashtag International Women's Day, let's remember all the women who are completely smeared by the left, but who all persist through the liberal hate. Sarah Sanders, Kellyanne Conway, Melania Trump, Nikki Haley, much more keep up the good work. NBC News tweets, McDonald's has flipped its famous Golden Arches logo for hashtag International Women's Day. And there's a photo of some of the staff at McDonald's. Usually they have hats that have M. Today it's been turned around, so it's a W. Comedian Cyrus McQueen tweets, happy hashtag International Women's Day to all the amazing women who make life worth living, the wives, mothers, grandmothers, and sisters whose sacrifices are undeniable, whose impact is immeasurable, and whose love and strength keep this world going. Musings tweets, when you judge a woman by her appearance, it doesn't define her, it defines you. Hashtag no to body shaming, hashtag girls protect girls, hashtag International Women's Day. And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The Syrian military attacks continue in Syria's eastern Ghouta area. British police say a nerve agent was used in the poisoning of a former Russian agent. A South Korean envoy heads to the U.S. to discuss North Korea's offer. And the Koreas will not march together at the opening of the Winter Paralympics. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The proverb, love heals all wounds, may have some new scientific support. Researchers at the University of Colorado Boulder and Israel's University of Haifa say they have found evidence that when one romantic partner holds hands with a partner in pain, the couple's breathing, heart rate, and brain waves will synchronize and will help the afflicted partner's pain to lessen. The study also suggests that the more empathy a significant other has for their partner in pain, the more their brain waves will sync, allowing more of the pain to subside. The study's lead author, Pavel Goldstein of the University of Colorado Boulder, said he got the idea to look into this concept after he discovered holding his wife's hand as she delivered a baby eased her pain. The team's findings were outlined in a new study published in a recent edition of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we meet a local TV reporter in the U.S. Midwest who wears a hijab. As we heard earlier, International Women's Day is celebrated today, March 8th, and it recognizes women's achievements without regard to race, ethnicity, language, or any social or economic divisions. The day emerged from the activities of labor movements at the turn of the 20th century in North America and across Europe. The latest episode of VOA's Plugged In with Greta Van Susteren explored recent changes in the conversation involving women, sexual assault, and leadership in the world. VOA's Steve Reddish has more.
Hashtag MeToo and hashtag No More social media campaigns are in the spotlight on International Women's Day, although it is not just Hollywood that is of concern. On Plugged In with Greta Van Susteren, Congresswoman Susan Brooks said the private sector was ahead of the government in dealing with sexual harassment.
Congress certainly, and as the chair of the House Ethics Committee, as you know, we are certainly dealing with that in Congress as well. But I'm really proud to be a part, again, of a bipartisan effort led by women and men in Congress to improve the processes in the House so that people can come forward and complain about sexual harassment.
The viral social media campaigns that started in the U.S. is reaching places like Pakistan, where VOA's Aisha Tanzeem is monitoring developments.
So when the Me Too movement started in U.S., you saw the repercussions of that in Pakistan and, you know, less so in Afghanistan, but in the cities. And you saw women in Pakistan posting their own Me Too stories and really connecting with Hollywood and really connecting and saying we are suffering the same thing.
Social media is proving to be an important tool in the fight for women's rights, according to Kamisa Kamara from Partners Global.
Well, I see more and more cases of domestic violence, which are advertised, sort of, on Facebook or Twitter. And so women are aware of what other women are facing in their homes, outside, in terms of, for example, sexual harassment. And what they do is they talk to one another and they provide advice to one another. They coach and mentor each other in order to face those situations.
In 1995, then First Lady Hillary Clinton laid down a marker about women's rights at a UN conference on women in Beijing.
If there is one message that echoes forth from this conference, let it be that human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights once and for all.
But today, two decades later, there are still challenges even in developed nations.
We need more women to run for office. That's something that the U.S. has actually fallen behind on relative to other countries. Other countries have more women in their parliaments or in their congresses than we do in the United States. And so we do want more women to run at all levels of government.
There are some empirical studies that show that when women are involved in peace processes, then peace is longstanding, sustainable, and then issues such as rape tend to disappear.
Experts like Kamara believe that Liberia is one of the nations where women's participation in the political arena has brought major political change. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. The Pew Research Center estimates there are 3.5 million Muslims living in the United States, a number that will grow as they become the second largest religious group in the country by 2040. But for one television reporter in the heartland of America, these are just statistics in the background of her daily task to meet deadlines as she charts a new and historic path forward representing her faith. VOA's Kane Faraba reports.
Stand by.
It's 6 o'clock p.m. in the Quad Cities of Illinois and Iowa.
It's local for you.
And as a local audience tunes in for the latest weather and news on WHBF-TV,
joins us in the newsroom.
There's a new face in front of the camera.
As a normal voter turnout for a primary election is about 22%.
I love the way that you can craft a story with TV news. You get to do it in the words of the people themselves.
This is Tahara Rockman's first on-camera job, and her appearance is uniquely identifiable.
It seemed normal to me because I was just following in the footsteps of my mom.
Those footsteps brought her to the WHBF-TV newsroom, where Rockman now stands alone as the first full-time broadcast television news reporter in the United States to wear the hijab.
I think I've made more of a conscious effort as I've grown older to connect more to my heritage. I have a lot of family members who don't wear a headscarf. My mom wears one, and a couple of my aunts also do. We're taught in Islam that it's a choice.
Rockman's parents are from India and Pakistan. She was born outside Chicago. But the job at WHBF isn't about that heritage or faith. Her boss says it's about her talent.
Tahara deserved this.
News director Mike Mickle never once considered asking Rockman to remove her hijab.
We realize that she is the first, but if she had been the 30th or the 300th or the 3,000th, it wouldn't have made a difference. We did it because she's Tahara, and she has earned this opportunity.
Rockman's debut is a surprise to the small but growing local Muslim population.
It shocks me, actually.
Mohammed El Zain attends one of two area mosques and views Rockman's opportunity as a critical moment for all Muslim Americans.
It's empowering to our kids to see anybody with a veil anywhere, because our kids struggle going to high school. So imagine this young lady being in front of a public audience.
Being in front of that audience isn't always easy.
Actually, just the past couple of days, I've gotten 2 or 3 emails just about how my religion is the religion of the devil and I should reconsider.
Mike Mickle stresses the positive comments outweigh the negative and adds the only real pressure at the moment is dealing with the overwhelming media interest.
It's allowing Tahara to share her journey with others, which we really want her to do. But at the same time, she has a deadline and she's expected to meet it.
I do think that this is a huge moment. But at the same time, day in and day out, nothing has changed. Just because you got to where you want to go doesn't mean you work any less.
This is Tahara calling from Local 4 News. How are you?
Rockman hopes her hard work pays off, not just to move up the television news career ladder, but so those who follow in her footsteps will have similar opportunities in offices across the country.
In the newsroom, Tahara Rahman, Local 4 News.
Kane Faraba, VOA News, Rock Island, Illinois.
Well, U.S. lawmakers in the state of Florida passed new gun control legislation weeks after the massacre at a local high school and despite lobbying efforts by the National Rifle Association. The bill bans bump stocks. It increases the minimum age to buy a rifle from 18 to 21, with the exception of law enforcement and the military. The bill also requires a 3-day waiting period for all gun sales. Additionally, the bill creates conditions allowing trained school employees to carry guns on school property. Following Wednesday's vote, the father of one of the victims at the Parkland High School urged the governor to sign the bill into law. The bill's passage came on the same day the accused 19-year-old shooter in Parkland, Florida, was indicted on 17 counts of premeditated murder and another 17 counts of attempted murder. No date was set for Nicholas Cruz to enter a plea during his court appearance Wednesday. Cruz, who was expelled last year from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, could face the death penalty in the case, but the prosecutor has not announced whether he plans to seek that penalty. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Ambassador Mark Green, and the Secretary of State for the Department for International Development of the United Kingdom, Penny Mordaunt, have launched the first-ever humanitarian grand challenge called Creating Hope in Conflict. It encourages innovators around the world to submit ideas to save and improve the lives of the most vulnerable and hardest to reach people affected by humanitarian crises caused by conflict. The partners will invest a combined $15 million over the next 5 years to support innovations that enhance the effectiveness and efficiency of humanitarian assistance. Announced on February 19th, the initial call for innovation seeks solutions that engage the private sector to provide, supply, or locally generate safe drinking water and sanitation, energy, life-saving information, or health supplies and services to help meet the needs of conflict-affected people. The Humanitarian Grand Challenge represents a multi-governmental partnership that enables governments and the private sector to work together alongside affected communities to address the unprecedented magnitude of suffering around the world. Nearly 136 million people across 25 countries are in need of humanitarian assistance. Less than 1% of humanitarian aid focuses on investing in innovations. The Humanitarian Grand Challenge is expected to fund 10 to 15 seed projects with grants of up to $250,000 and 2 to 4 transition-to-scale projects of up to $1 million to support the refinement, testing, and implementation of solutions that have already achieved proof of concept. This is the 10th Grand Challenge supported by USAID and its partners. To date, USAID and its Grand Challenge partners have delivered grant funding and technical assistance worth more than $500 million to more than 450 innovators in 70 countries. The United States is proud to work with the United Kingdom, other international partners, and innovators around the world to meet the daunting challenge of saving lives in conflict-driven humanitarian crises.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.